I'll give that number again. Post Office Box
181417, Cleveland Heights, Ohio. Yeah, no. Well, we're going back in time again tonight to the year. I don't even know what year this would be. This is so ancient of a rerun of a show. It's labeled Hour of Slack number 177. That would make it a little more than 3 years after we started in, I believe, 1985. So could this actually be that old? Before the 90s. Anyway, friends, yes, this is it. A visit back in time to a day when there was a different kind of slack among we, the upright primates, called the Yatinsini.
Rocketing away now, dear friends, out of normal time and into showtime with your hideous horror hosts, Willa Dobbs, Reverend Ivan Stang, Hal Robbins, Puzzling Evidence, Lies, Gerig Brogfran, Dr. Frollo Drummond, all that horrible stuff. Oh, no, wait!
And man has always peered fearfully into his own future.
But,
he ain't got no legs.
Me neither.
You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to
the subgenius hour of slack.
Chris Bob. Oh yes, dear friends. This is Li Bijing, the Chinese subgenius. And you are listening to the hour of slack. Remember, Bob is the comrade of all people. Here in China, just like in America, the people need slack. In Chinese, we call slack le tian pai. But it must be true slack, not the bad slack of the conspiracy. Please, Bob, help me somebody.
Vain is right. They dug up the skulls the other day. The skull farmers in Russia did. Dug up the skull of Anastasia and the Tsar. My ancestors. You don't know what Stang really stands for, do you? It's a sad thing, man. I read the paper. I was going to do a show about Russian history tonight, but instead, instead, I had to get the taxes in. You know, there's three things, as they say in that old song, that old-timey song, death, taxes, and Bob. And I did it, though. I did it tonight, in fact. Got my Form 1040, Schedules A and B, Schedule C, D, E, and S, E, and Schedule 8592, plus complete corporate forms for the Church of the Subgenius. Can you imagine what it's like trying to do taxes for the Church of the Subgenius, the world's first industrial church, the one true church that's ready to pay its taxes because it doesn't think that you ought to have to subsidize religions you might not believe in? Huh? I go into the tax office and they say, "Oh, what is it you do, Mr. Stang?" And I say, "Oh, well, I'm just an old skull farmer. You know, been at farming skulls. My business kind of depends on the weather more than anything else. Of course, it is a lot of work. You got to put a fair amount of work in there. You got to fertilize them. That ain't easy. I mean, you got to get right down there in the furrow. You know, the furrow, my friend, and make physical love to the dirt and fertilize them skulls and hope for a good crop. You know, not to mention at the beginning of the season, sowing all them children of the hydra's teeth. You gotta throw them teeth out there and get them things going. It's tough, man, trying to explain this to them. They don't get it. Well, is this a two-person partnership, or is this a corporation, or a... friends, I... Oh, listen to that. Just when I go, come on, Jimmy. I didn't even have to touch it. Just, man, that's what mental hate will do for you. Yep. I don't mind paying taxes for schools and highways and the poor, the homeless, the crippled, thermonuclear weapons, oil spill cleanups, lazy dips who'd rather vegetate on welfare than work. Oh, I don't mind it. You know, arming the Contras secretly. Nah, no big deal. Paying the governor's mansion, stocking the wildlife commissioner's personal hunting range with endangered species. Nah. I don't mind. I don't mind any of that, really. I just hate the paperwork. Figuring out how much the Stang family owes the Dallas Commune, the Texas Commune, the Federal Commune. That's no big deal now that we're communists and the Russians are capitalists. Hey, do you think I'm confused? No, I've got it straight. I pay for the oil companies to clean up the environment, and I pay for their oil. Do I hold a grudge? No, not me. I'm... I'm beat, man. I'm beat from doing taxes, friends. I'm a dead man. I'm a dead man. Just call me old skeleton face Stang. I wanted to talk about the Russian Revolution, but I was too worn out from fulfilling my duties to the capitalist state to do it. I could have defeated the Bolsheviks, but instead, I had to pay taxes. Yep, I might have helped turn the Soviets into a democracy instead of and ended the arms race, but had to do taxes instead for 5 days, or America would have killed me. Oh, can you translate what those whales are saying? How much tax do I have to pay for this oil on my baleen, sir? To clean, can I get a dentist to clean my baleens, doctor? But I'll tell you what, friends. I believe in America. I believe America could be the greatest nation that has ever walked this earth. Yes, America, or in scientific terms, Brontotherium amerigo, was the largest land mammal known in the annals of history. Although technically not a carnivore, the Great America was able to use its thermonucleotops, or magic horns, to rend and tear the flesh of both its vicious foes and, during mating season, members of its own species. This rough beast slouching its way towards Bethlehem, this Beelzebush, consumed over 87 times its own weight daily and excreted 107 times that into its own environment. Experts theorized that it had to spend most of its time afloat in its own fecal sea in order to prevent its bones being pulverized by its own enormous bulk.
Thus, it wallowed complacently in the primeval seas, never guessing that it soon faced extinction at the hands of parasites, tiny bacteria bred from the endless smoldering heaps of its own refuse. It is said that nuclear fusion could occur at room temperature within the vast gullet of this behemoth.
They live, and,
thank you. I don't have to. Other eyes are watching you beside me. Many other eyes.
Countdown for blast off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents...
Hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
This is your host to welcome you in through the squeaking door to another half hour of horror. Come in, won't you? Sit down.
Yes, come on in, why don't you? No, we don't care. You can do whatever you want in here. You're in the hour of slack now. Yes. The voice of the Church of the Subgenius, bringing you the wisdom of our guru, J.R. Bob Dobbs, over the airwaves. Yes, dear friends, this is your horror host, Reverend Ivan Stang, continuing, as best I can, considering, to bring you the word of that man Bob, that great salesman of eternity, that man who... If I do have to pay my taxes, at least make sure that he himself gets a cut from the corrupt congressmen, IRS officials, and computers with whom he has had numerous adventures of sexual congress. Thank you. This is a scorched ear policy. Scorched ear policy, my friends. But you know, at the same time, the United States will protect you if you don't. And that's what they ask us to do, is not to. They ask us, don't, please. Just don't. Whatever it is you're doing, don't. Just settle down, have a good time, build up your immunity system, and just don't. I mean, that's all there is to it. No problem there, is there? Well, you know, the problem... There is a problem. There is a problem there, and that is that they won't stop the other shows from getting in. Our airwaves are constantly being invaded by a yellow horde. Yes, a yellow horde from another galaxy. The galaxy in Berkeley, California, whence cometh the KPFA. Hour of anti-slack. I think I hear them coming in.
It's funny, it's hard to know what's funny right now. I am doing the show, but it's in a trance, you know. It's really wonderful to listen to the shows later, because you know, there's the show, like your show. You just go in, you walk into the studio, you put on the show suit, and you become the show. And that's easy because there's so many times of doing it. You know, it's not quite like I don't know, you don't have to think very much, but the fun of the show is thinking, yes. Yes, indeedy, Pooh.
Herbert Walker Bush, presidential private eye. What a guy. He'll figure out the problems and their answers before 6 a.m. When, of course, the show was full of its tent and steal across the desert back to Libya where it came from.
Several people reported seeing a kangaroo about 5 feet tall hopping through cornfields. People hesitated to report the sighting because everyone would think they were crazy.
Lee Harvey Kangaroo!
Yeah!
This giant kangaroo acted alone and was guilty of no
hot butter rum martinis here on the show. Now we're on the same old show.
Offering a hot.
Don't worry about the presidential thing, it's just a momentary hang-up, you know.
Too bad, I guess Fantasy Caller never listens to the show anymore.
No, she folded up her tent, went back to Libya where she came from.
That's terrible. You don't know how I'm devastated by that. Well, let's see what this caller has to say.
Oh no! Oh no! Oh no!
Now the show staff is wrestling with the various responsibilities.
Sort of unfortunate mistake was
show.
Made. It seemed that,
makes me feel all warm and cool and casual all over, eh? Okay, take part in the show. 8484425. I won't eat until you call. We're down here at the show doing our regular thing. Isn't it fun?
Yeah.
Makes you want to dance. And now we're going to plug in some
With millions of people barreling along our highways each day, it is not unexpected that driving unknowns are becoming more and more common.
Hello. Is my Dobbs Head Pizza ready?
Hello.
Dobbs Head Pizza.
Yeah, it's coming out now.
And look, it's all over everything.
It makes me want to pee.
I thought it makes you want to squat your bob.
Hold it, man, for God's sake.
No, but I got a great big bob in my pants.
Bob somewhere else. This is a private function.
That's right, and I'm about to flush.
It's around the corner and to the left.
So I put my microphone near the toilet bowl before I do the final recording?
Don't worry, son. You'll leave your mark on the Subgenius show.
Well, I put a little mark on the outside of the door with some Dubrofan juice.
Boy, I'd love to press button B on the blazing, shining B board, but I'm afraid of cutting off some important connection or conduit.
Go ahead. Don't be afraid. Bob will tell you which button to push.
Is it all right? No. Well,
which way to go here in the future?
It's only a matter of time before the future becomes the unpleasant present.
Push the fast forward button, and that way the Dobbs Head Pizza will heat up a little quicker.
There it goes. Fast forward.
Well,
look at it. It's really going fast now.
And there's Glass Madness way down the end of the little tiny clear. Collar hole.
Glass Madness is used to it. He can ride a bucking show.
I'm on the bucking show, and I wish the bucking show would get off my bucking phone.
I don't think I care for that kind of language.
Well,
I fail to see the humor.
Dismount that telephone, and you'll...
I brighter than a thousand suns. My humble eyeballs have melted.
Humble eyeballs? What?
Put the eyeballs on the Dobbs Head Pizza.
Several 5:20 in the morning.
A British case received considerable publicity when a driver reported that his headlights suddenly seemed to bend into a nearby field at a spot where several strange accidents had occurred previously.
I hate that when that happens.
Light can be bent by a powerful gravitational field, but a force strong enough to bend a light beam would certainly be strong enough to be felt by the driver, and it would certainly pull the car itself off the road.
Oh, it's just another trick with glass. They used funny lenses.
A flying saucer had been seen in the neighborhood briefly before the incident.
Really?
Pilots who have survived harrowing experiences in the famous Bermuda Triangle
reported
that their radios and instruments went haywire. They felt physically and mentally disoriented, clues pointing to electromagnetic pollution.
Yeah.
But since there are no relay towers or radar sets on the Atlantic, what could be the source? Got any ideas?
sure, Dobbs had pizzas, man. If you get them in between your radio and your telephone, all of a sudden the light beams start bending. And I hate that when that happens, because I can't read anymore.
According to reports, the intake engines of the jet aircraft were clogged with the floating Dobbs head pizzas, which caused so many crashes in this mysterious quadrant of the Atlantic.
Absolutely. I could confirm that. If you saw the grill of my car...
Yeah, I still got a pizza ass.
Gorilla of my dreams, I love you.
Gorilla of my mist.
Ah, yes, you missed that one. I think we all missed there. Yeah. Missed by a mile. But we know that beams of energy on all frequencies are constantly bathing the Earth from space.
Did you say beams of energy?
Beams of energy.
No, like Boston beams.
Beams trapped or weakened by the Van Allen belt, which fell around the Van Allen ankles when the Van Allen pants fell down.
Yes, that's because the Van Allen waist was much too big.
Some of these beams get through our atmosphere and sweep over our planet in much the same way that our radar beams have explored Venus and Mars.
You say that the beams replaced your penis?
Could it be that someone on some distant world is examining your happiness with radar?
Oh.
And occasionally, when a human is caught in one of their probes, he becomes unhappy, drives his car off a cliff, or dives his plane into the ocean.
Or buys paper snake. Paper snake, $1. Scare somebody, make you happy. Scare somebody.
Don't worry, be happy. Eviscerate the tiger.
I've got a question, though. How come there's little plastic army men everywhere in my house and all in my refrigerator? How come that?
Shoot him. Use that AK-47 to shoot him.
Have you looked in the freezer?
Yeah, they're in there, too.
They're everywhere. They're all around you, but hang
tough.
Your wife
loves you, so please.
Semper Fi.
I think... There's a little custard. Plastic soldier guy.
He's wading through the custard.
I think puzzling evidence put them there.
Yeah,
I got puzzling evidence
at AK-47.
All over my gun.
Disguised as a regular TV repairman, that is to say, a refrigerator repairman, rather. He made his way into the house and fluffed the refrigerator with tiny plastic statuettes.
My gun says puzzling evidence on the outside, and it says slack all over the handle. I don't know what it means.
He left spray-painted graffiti ruining the interior of the house.
Slack below.
He painted slack all over the interior, destroying priceless hangings and curtains.
It's slack blah, B-L-A-H. Yeah. It's slack blah.
Hinkley Brow then proceeded to the second floor, where he slept in three separate beds. The first one was too hard.
The second one was too soft.
The third one had chicken bones in it. Like underneath Stang's couch.
Yes, and he slept on that couch for a night and a day. Huge thorns and briars grew around the house, so no one could get through.
And they couldn't deliver the dog's head pizza, so that the radar beans couldn't get out of the garbage disposal, and everything clogged up. It was really bad.
The years went by and became centuries. But the subgenius machinery continued to broadcast, even though no one was on the air. Only the multi-indexed memory bank, itself so highly organized by a bank of synchronized computers that its complexity almost approaches intelligence, managed to fabricate a show which is the subgenius show you hear these days. A collection and compendium of tapes mimicking, though some still prefer to say duplicating, the famous previous years of subgenius broadcast.
To identify the
transmutant. You order breadcrumbs and that mutant.
Awesome. Totally awesome.
I will have some sea bass on that pizza and
squid.
Yeah, squiddly diddly. I put it on there.
Is there a caller online too?
And plenty of Parmesan cheese. Yes, there is, but we hate to lose you, oh favored one.
We have another caller on line three. Hello. Hello, this is Radio Abuse Hotline. What the hell do you want now?
Stop abusing your radio.
It's time to blow up glass.
No! Hello, you're on the air.
Fudgy Wudgy Wawa.
Ukabala Ponga.
I like the fall down of this town.
Hick Dominica Honda Sock to Boom the Lady Yoo-Hoo.
Ichi Weeji Goo Goo Kaha.
Ching Chang, Walla Walla Bing Bang.
Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah.
La bébé de ma tante sur la table de mon oncle.
Now I must talk scientific.
Où est la salle de bain?
Les bonbons de ma oncle.
The speed of light goes in certain speed.
Le crayon est sur la table.
The speed of light to a certain speed?
The mayor of the...
What slows down the light?
Let's go over that again. You say you saw some sort of monster?
You see, it's actually the fart.
Cut your
This snail is 4.5 inches long and 4 inches tall. Good looking. Made of blue molded plastic and then
flocked in yellow, brown, and red.
Flocked.
This snail is flocked and blacked. Fuzzy, not slimy.
The
eyes are plastic and green with black pupils. Yes, come with us now millions of miles into space to the planet of the snails.
Science fiction theater, it's on. Come on.
Beings stranger than you can imagine exist, gibbering and twitching, millions of miles beyond the stars. Unthinkable monstrosities.
Ooh, it's weird. Look at them. It's weird.
The margins of our skies.
These guys are really
their
weird.
Their inky mandibles and chittering pedipalps thirsting for human blood.
They're icky.
Could you write an excuse for me?
They're ooky and ghastly. And they're going to be here soon. Because our Earth, together with our sun and solar system, travels at an enormous rate through the black, inky gulfs of space.
Which brings me to the subject of the speed of light.
186,000 miles per second.
So what slows it down to that speed?
It's a relativistic speed, son, and other relativistic speeds may be possible. All we know occurs in our little pocket of space. But outside these rural precincts, a mysterious universe exists of unbelievable complexity. A complexity so great, it is indiscriminate from a gigantic intelligence.
Black
malevolent,
or white,
biding its time,
nobody
hatching its plots and plans against us. Oh yes, my friends, I know. They lurk behind our furniture,
yes.
Ready to pounce out.
They are the furniture.
I've seen them, haven't you?
Hello, I'm a chair.
I'm afraid we have to yield to the chair.
Well, we won't have to yield to the chair. Let's just blow the chair up.
The chair recognizes the floor. Up. And that was the last thing he ever recognized.
And I've been constipated for about 5 years.
He confiscated his pet turtle and his slingshot, and it's in Miss Dipple's desk.
And I had a big gulp from the 7-Eleven.
Well, throw a towel over it. Here, we don't want to hear your personal adventures.
But the third thing was the 25-cent discount.
Sorry, no discounts available.
No dimes, huh?
But 30 cents ago,
our fathers brought forth upon this continent.
And 25 cents discount.
Conceived in liberty.
Otherwise, I'm going to have regrets all the rest of my life.
And predicated on the suppository that all men are deflated evil.
But my overall point was, the gist of it, in summary.
Now we are betrayed by a great simple dwarf, determining whether this nation or Carrie Nation shall long endure.
But the towel, I don't have any clean towels left after shoving.
We here met on a butter field of this war. At bay in an Ader Gray essay, we cannot concentrate. We cannot follow the straw. This tin can, living and dead, will long forget what we stew here. They will not long forget what we ate here.
I wonder what happened here a long time ago.
Yeah,
these
no kidding,
ruins of a radioactive Martian city definitely.
I guess it doesn't really matter. It's just a bunch of dead guys.
Yeah.
They're piled up in heaps.
More dead guys.
I think the whole thing's unsanitary and unsavory.
I like this show.
It's a wickerware left over from the Revolutionary War.
Wicked indeed.
You Plastic wicker man. I'm going to take the wicker man out. Yeah, there they go. And by pushing button, I can have 100 things going at once. It's just amazing. And we get all these people calling in going, this is the first time I ever listened to this show. What are you guys doing? What kind of a show is this? Well, dear friends, this is the show about Bob. Yes, the first mate of our great ship. You know what they mean by first mate.
And all's well.
Yep.
First mate Bob and the crew of the good ship Grace.
The voices from the harbor called haven of rest.
Oh,
I'm told
yes,
that
friends.
Everybody likes the story.
A, like the story of Bob.
Every life is a story.
Because Bob was a story, you know, but at the same time, he was a reality more hideous than anything you could imagine in your wildest dreams. Those two wild and crazy guys.
4444118. For a horse, Jochen of Eel, the best no roof, no, you know.
Cops of Fossil, Nagerman, Edlingor. Friends, get your ears vaccinated every week that you listen in, because otherwise, well, it just ain't no telling what happens. Well, the lines are lighting up. All we have to do is accuse you of not understanding a damn thing, and then they call it, yeah. I get it. This is some sort of takeoff on religion, isn't it? Oh, you go ahead and believe that. As you go down deeper and deeper into your mire of ignorance and foolishness.
Caught a plane, got off in Spain, pulled it out and did the same damn thing.
I claim all these garbage dumps.
Oh, yes, friends, once again we bring you Papa Prell.
It's time once more for another exciting installment of Prell Profile. Your opportunity to hear super celebrities in depth and up close. I am your host, the Papa Prell, and tonight our guest is the author of those controversial role-playing games that have made national headlines on more than one occasion. Gary Gygax, folks, of D&D, here on Prell Profiles. Gary Gygax of D&D on Prell Profiles. You know, I just thought of this. We got Gigi of D&D on PP. Yeah. Thanks for being with us.
Why do you want to know?
Well, as a matter of fact, your game has been accused of being very satanic and occult-oriented. And I was curious to find out when this obsession and love affair with the occult began.
It began very, very early. About as early as I can remember, I heard stories of magic rings and things like that. My father talked to me and told me
so he was
all sorts of good things. And then I liked to read and be read to. And so it began from childhood and culminated around 1969 or so, when I tossed make-believe into a... well, relatively serious recreation of medieval warfare using miniature figurines.
And so that the medieval warfare and everything got you involved in the infatuation with death and violence, and that led to the games, huh?
Everybody liked that so much, we eventually did the D&D game a few years later.
I see. So, this in turn led to demons and voices in your brain. And what exactly does D&D stand for anyway? That's Demons and Dungeons, is it?
Called Dungeons and Dragons, medieval world
Dungeons
fantasy role-playing game.
Well, let me just get this straight. So your game teaches them how to be murderers, rapists, and miscellaneous evildoers, is that right?
Well, what they do is they decide what they're going to be. I want to be a magic user, or a fighter, or a thief, or a cleric.
Or a thief? So you teach them how to be thieves, too? I mean, is that really necessary? That's what we got buzzing for. Not to mention TV. I mean, why would you do that?
You don't have much, and you don't know much, and then as you succeed...
No, I mean, why would you...
From adventure to adventure, problem solving. Solving and quest fulfillment.
Material
you
goods.
You gain more experience.
Oh,
and
great.
Experience gives you better chances of
eluding
doing
police.
Whatever it is your profession is.
Stealing.
You know more spells. You're better
Stealing.
Equipped to be a fighter or what? You know,
a thief. Thanks to you, yeah. Well, I'm prepared to let that one slide for right now, because quite frankly, compared to the allegations of murder and rape that your game supposedly inspires, I guess thievery's kind of the least of your worries. But I might just follow up this much and ask, I take it you get some sort of percentage of the cut from this, eh?
It's about a 50-50 deal.
Oh, really? 50-50, so, like, they fence all the goods, and then you get about half of the booty. I guess they at least learn math that way. How do they keep track of all that anyway? I would imagine that get very complicated after a while. Go ahead, I won't tell the police.
The rules are extensive. You can sit down, and if you have patience and
good stealing skills.
Good vocabulary.
Oh, they learn vocabulary, too.
To play the game.
Wonderful.
Most people learn by
stealing.
By playing.
Okay. Well, getting on to the demonic thing again, because we don't want to get all caught up in I mean, like I said, what's thievery compared to killing? So let's cover those a little bit more, if we might, because I take it there's a lot more genres that emphasize death and killing than just regular thievery, eh?
Many other genres. We did, in fact, when I was with the publisher of Dungeons & Dragons.
The Printer's Devil, huh?
We had any number of other role-playing game forms out of
D&D,
science fiction.
S&M.
Espionage.
L.A. So Strangler.
You can play in virtually any genre.
Yeah, I bet. What about good behavior?
Get out of there,
Mark.
But that don't change the truth none. There's right and there's wrong. You gotta do one or the other. You do the one and you're living. You do the other and you may be walking around, but you're dead as a beaver hat.
Now, the 12th of May was a hell of a day. When the news got around to all the seaport town that the great Titanic was sinking down. But on this ship was a man named Shine, with pearly white teeth and a black behind. Shine run up from the deck below hollering, "Captain, Captain, don't you know there's 40 feet of water on the boiler room floor?" The captain said, "Go back, you dirty black. We got 1,000 pumps to keep this water back." Shine went back and began to think. He said, "This big bad mother is bound to sink." Shine said, "There's fish in the ocean and crabs in the sea. But this is one time you good cool white people ain't got bullshit me.
Buy the cheese and buy the pickle, doesn't even cost a nickel, now wash it down."
Clink, clink, no more to drink. I had a cellar full, but now it's gone. Drink, drink, the glasses clink. Like the anvil chorus and my head is splitting. A breaky, a busty, oh brother, oh ow. What do I do now? Pink elephants are running after me. Oh, that stuff was smooth as silk. From now on I'll stick to milk. Nothing else to drink for me.
Do you remember how it really was? You and me and booze. A threesome, do you remember? Not that it wasn't great while it lasted.
We can have it back that way again. If
I'll drink with you, but I'm not going to drink with you. It's finished.
I wouldn't ask you to drink with me. I'd control myself.
Can't control yourself. You're an alcoholic, just the same as I am. You and I were a couple of drunks on a sea of booze, and the boat sank. I got a hold of something that kept me from going under, and I'm not going to let go of it. But not for you, not for anyone.
And its name is Bob. And it's Bobby. Yes, Bob Dobbs, dear friends. And there's nothing wilder than life in the bosom of Bob. Hey, well, actually, he ain't got much of a bosom. He's kind of chicken-breasted, actually. But it's that mighty saint of sails. That salesman of the universe. Bob. He can take the world in a love embrace. You can fire all of your guns at once and explode into Bob's face. Of course, you gotta pay Bob. You gotta pay Bob's radio stations that bring you the word of Bob, because, you know, they exist on nothing but splicing tape and, you know, no advertising. So we need your money, friends. Send those pledges in to whatever station this is. I can't even tell. I
I've been through so many shows in one night, I don't even know what show I'm on.
What about good behavior? Do you have any games that promote good behavior?
No, the most popular is certainly fantasy.
Oh, the S&M types.
Horror and science fiction, both.
Horror and science fiction.
And espionage.
You teach them sabotage?
Post-Holocaust isn't so much science. There's a science fantasy, Gamma Rotters.
Wait a minute, let me get this straight. You promote the Holocaust? Do you really do that?
Yes.
Yes.
It's put out by Game Designers Workshop, as I recall. It's called Twilight 2000.
Twilight 2000 sounds like Death Wish 2000. Don't you feel the slightest bit remorse and guilt about promoting something like that?
I've never played it.
That's reassuring.
It's just, why not? I mean,
why not?
If you can make up wizards and
killers, stranglers,
so forth, why not
kill a few million people
post-Holocaust?
Sure, why not? After all, it's not your neck on the line, unfortunately. And besides, like you say, it's a lot of fun. You know, I'm very curious to find out what some of the other games are that you have in store for the American public.
I have done a game called Cyborg Commando, which is set about
Cyborg
50
Commando.
Years in the future,
mm-hmm.
Where Earth is being invaded by some aliens with...
Oh, wait a minute. Don't tell me they have hair all over them and praying mantis arms. You know, I know all about that, and that's exactly the kind of point I want to get to. You know, a few of these ideas are just a little bit too realistic, and well, they're disturbing, if you don't mind me using that word. And, well, quite frankly, I'd like to know what your inspiration is for these things. Are they voices in your head? Where do you come up with these ideas?
It's a lot like writing a story.
Oh, really?
If you like to read about something...
Murder, rape, dismemberment.
Why not play a game on it?
Oh, sure.
It's pretty much the same. The way I write, too, is that, I had a lot of fun playing a game in that particular genre. Why don't I write a story about it?
Mm-hmm.
So it cuts both ways.
No pun intended.
And that's what I did. I enjoyed... A role-playing game is very much a plot outline where the acting
plot
is then
outline.
Filled in and the eventual end of the story is determined by the players interacting with this plot outline that is there.
Uh-huh, which they then fill in with a human being after they take these little games that you have very seriously and end up killing people, which is exactly what some teenagers did, and they murdered people because they had heard about it in their games. Now, what do you have to say about that? I suppose you blame it all on the players.
Oh, of course it is, although
oh,
you
really?
Set it up for that, too. But
so you're admitting that.
This is a group cooperative game. Most role-playing games are group cooperative.
Kind of like a gangland rape or whatever.
Uh-huh. Fight against its own numbers.
Uh-huh.
It works together to overcome outside opposition.
Like the police. Uh-huh.
So there is violence, certainly, in a role-playing game.
Sure.
There's violence in virtually everything we see and do. And
everything
I don't think
you
that's
see and do.
Bad because I believe that it helps to sublimate those
your income.
Things, and you act it out, and it's gone.
Yeah, and so are the victims that they acted out on, which is the main problem that we're having here. Now, I think the argument that you're maintaining is much like the gun control argument, that guns don't kill people, people kill people. And so you're saying that Dungeons and Dragons don't kill people, that people kill people, and they just happen to be under the influence of your game when they murder these people, much like a drug or something. Is that what you're saying?
I believe so very much.
Mm-hmm.
The
you're stammering now, a little nervous,
the game
huh?
itself
uh-huh.
had taken some flack.
Sure.
Basically from fundamentalists who had religious objections.
Yeah, it's all the clerics' fault.
After all, it has magic in it, and
uh-huh.
dragons and demons and
heavy on the
like
demons,
that.
Yeah.
So, the
authorities
have sometimes, in small towns particularly, encouraged people to say, that, you know, the devil made me do it.
Uh-huh. Well, who made you do it? That's what I want to know.
The game.
Oh, so you can blame it on the game, but they can't blame it on the game. Well, that sounds very consistent. It sounds like you're not willing to accept responsibility for any of the problems your games create, but what about your children? What would you tell them if they were interested in it?
This is a dangerous game, and I remember OBS because
OBS.
It's really easy, because they say it's a cult.
Uh-huh.
Now, nobody ever defines what a cult is. What is a cult? And if you begin to define it, usually it's, well, those bad things that
that you espouse.
I don't like.
Occult.
What is occult? Just what is the occult? Do you know?
Well, I can't come up with any dictionary definitions right now, but I can visualize a pretty clear image of what the occult is, let me tell you, from where my standpoint is right now. Then again, I haven't exactly studied it either the way you have. That's assuming you admit you have studied the occult.
Well, sure, I have the anything that you could find in most libraries.
Oh,
that's it.
You go to a library,
I have no great knowledge of the occult. I do have the... I think Avon published the Encyclopedia of Paranormal
Avon,
and the Occult.
Ding Dong, Satan Calling, yeah.
I read a lot. I've read a lot of authored mythology,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. And as far as I know, I picked up, you know, I have a good memory, and so I can remember a few real things.
But, I should, that you participated in.
There's probably more occult material in a typical horror novel that's, you know, selling millions of copies today than there is in, and certainly more blood and violence than there is in Dungeons and Dragons.
I see. So that's where you're going to be going next, into the horror and death and maiming books, huh? Well, let's stick to the Dungeons and Dragons, though, if we might, just because we're about running out of time here. I want to ask you a rather personal question, if we can get this personal. Where do you see your soul as going? Is it going to go to the devil then, basically?
Probably so. I really don't know any Satanists. That's another thing I keep hearing.
Besides yourself.
Recently, I think it's become very popular, and I'm sure that if the particular television medium keeps on hyping on it, that a lot of the teenagers will have to pick it up.
Satanism?
The adults are saying, oh, this is terrible, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it's like waving a red flag to children who are trying to establish their own identities and be different.
So you suggest we should tell them do worship the devil so that they don't worship the devil, eh? That makes a lot of sense, and I bet you'd really like that. Hey, have you ever even been to church, really?
Actually, I knew some at one time, some Catholic priest.
Oh,
some
you
other
mentioned Catholics.
That were quite religious, that played.
That doesn't count, though.
Sometimes as clerics, in fact, that was their character.
Mm-hmm.
It differs from group to group, of course, because whatever the group decides, they all want to be somewhat, evil, and then they can play it that way.
That's fine with you.
In reality, there is no real evil going on.
Oh,
it's
all make-believe. Right, it's all make-believe, and it's only when the bodies start falling that you have to worry about it at all. Well, you've got a very interesting perspective on this game, I gotta admit. In fact, if you want the author, I'd suggest you a little bit the loon, but seeing how the money goes to you, I can understand that sort of attitude.
Sure.
Although I guess all you're really concerned about is whether the stock starts falling, because as long as those games are selling, well, then I guess a few dead in the street aren't going to matter very much, I suppose. But just remember, there's going to be hell to be paid, pal, and you're going to be doing the paying, if you know what I mean, if you don't really think this stuff is bad for you.
I'm not so sure that it isn't bad. It's a good way to take a look at, what would it be like to be a desperado?
Well,
a killer and a hunted person.
Well, I'm sure they find out when they play your game and when they get hooked on it and go out and practice it on a few innocent victims. But I'm very glad to say that this about winds it up for this exciting and informative segment of Prell Profiles. My guest, of course, has been Gary Gygax, creator of Dungeons & Dragons, the role-playing game that teaches your kids how to kill. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Gygax, and here's your own special Prell Profile paperweight. That's my profile etched on it, by the way. Be sure to point that out to your fiends, friends.
Yes, thank you, Papa Prell. Well,
yes. Hi, Papa Prell. Thank you all for listening, and God bless.
Yeah, the ugly...
And I do mean God bless. And God bless to you, too, because you need it the most, let me tell you.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the Board of Trustees, the staff and management, or those interviewed by KZSU. A few points...
Or KNON, or any other station that might... possibly be heard from.
You went back into the
God, there went. Well, friends, yeah, that was Papa Prell. Mighty, quite an editing job there. That was an easy one for me to play for 20 minutes, you see. I didn't have to edit a whole lot, and I just left him to do it. Papa Prell out of Stanford University. I can't believe they let him be the dean.
The Mr. Science Lecture Series. Volume 1, Number 1.
The Mutron.
Delivered by the Reverend Seth Deitch, First Church of Mr. Science, Boston.
Outside the realm of conspiracy science and in the clear light of the so-called forbidden sciences, we will find we have a far greater chance of understanding the true nature of the universe. We are told about matter and energy and space and time as being either consistent realities governed by laws or as foggy abstracts that have no particular being outside of that of being convenient linguistic aids to make the whole thing easier to swallow. We at the Temporal Management Research Facility of the Church of Mr. Science of the Subgenius have, through rigorous probing through mountains of existing little-known works on the subject of time and its methods of control, have discovered the key for blowing the whistle on the whole fraudulent twaddle that is modern science. This key is the Mutron. The truth must now be told. How it was covered up for so long would make a story intriguing enough for a separate book, but it's too involved to be told here. The actual issue at hand is the Mutron and its pivotal role in the management of the true cosmos. In order to properly understand the following, it must first be made clear what actually constitutes an elementary particle. The first of these basic particles is the electron, which has no mass but possesses a charge that is commonly described as possibly infinite, thus making it the fundamental unit of energy. It and other related particles, i.e. positrons, photons, gravitons, etc., acting in concert, make up the Yakutismic field, which is responsible for holding everything that is anything together. The second is the much rarer infinite mass particle, commonly called a black hole. These particles, like the electrons, occupy no space, but the influence of a single particle can be felt at a much greater distance. They often have event horizons many miles wide, beyond which not even light can escape. The third fundamental particle is the Mutron. The Mutron carries with it an infinite temporal capacity that makes it alter the rate and intensity and general quality of the passage through time of anything it touches. The Mutron is very likely the rarest particle in this universe. As far as we know, there might well be only one of them, though there could be as many as a few dozen without generating a dangerous concentration of Mutron phenomena. Section A. Just how fucking big everything really is. What we know is the universe can be envisioned as a giant atom with the black hole acting as the nucleus and the Mutron or Mutrons acting as the electron cloud, with the electrons providing the energy for the Mutron to drive us forward through time. Just about everything else in the universe is just so much debris cluttering up the works of things. The fact that there is one such atom more than suggests the existence of others. The Mutron has a corresponding antiparticle known as the tachyon, which travels through time in a direction which we perceive as backwards, so that to someone who is not in the know it will appear to exceed the speed of light. The simple fact of the matter is that tachyons are extra-universal Mutrons impinging on our universe at a different temporal angle. These are the Mutrons of atom universes that ours is in compound with. After this, the atomic metaphor breaks down. No atom of mere matter divides itself into alternate selves almost constantly, but our universe does. All the time, the universe splits in order to express every alternative open to any phenomenon transpiring within, no matter how small or seemingly insignificant. This is the only way our minds can express the perception of the fifth dimension, or more properly, the second dimension of time. So this introduces the concept of time viewed as a plane rather than a line. But there's another dimension of space, so is the case with time, there is also a corresponding up-down time. This is the direction in which our mental eyes exist. In this direction, we find alternate time tracks similar to the sidewise ones, with the difference being that theirs is oriented in the direction opposed to temporal gravity, so that elements of those other selves are constantly falling into our awareness from above. The Mutron passes through all these spaces with equal ease and is modulated by them, much like the photon is modulated by bouncing off or passing through matter. Thus, information of a very subtle and distorted nature is conveyed to us from our other universes on the Mutron Express. We call this information gnosis, and its influence has been felt by mankind time and again for as long back as we have records, and no doubt back to our very genesis and before. The earliest known Mutron impact on Earth occurred in the era of the dawn of life. The primordial sea teemed with the most primitive of bacteria. Their genetic material was a simple molecule shaped like a lumpy ladder. It was very chemically stable. The Mutron passed through Earth and spewed out a wake that left each and every molecule of DNA twisted beyond recognition. In this state, its stability was ruined. and any force or random glitch that Mother Nature had to offer changed it somehow. Thus, evolution had begun. The vast majority of these events, however, affect individual beings or objects. One such example is Great Britain's Stonehenge Monument, which is not man-made as is popularly presumed, but is merely the material evidence of a rather minor mutron splash. Certain great sages of the past and present have actually had mutrons pass directly through their crania. A partial listing of these select people will give an idea of the effects that may be expected of such an encounter. Gautama Buddha, the Prophet Enoch, Akhenaten, Leonardo, William Beckford, Aleister Crowley, Marcel Duchamp, R. Buckminster Fuller, Antonio Gaudi, Arnold Palmer, the list goes on. It's interesting to note that J.R. Bob Dobbs is the only known human being through whom a mutron is passed twice. After going through the back of his head, it was reflected by the mystic pipe of Dobbs back through his head for a double dose of gnosis. In the light of this particular view, one might ask, what about the Big Bang and all that stuff? Well, it seems that matter does not play a very big role in the actual nuts and bolts operation of the universe. In fact, we find that it is the case in about half the universe's sample that there is no matter at all. Section B. What we must do about all this. It is well known that the electron can be pressed into service for all kinds of uses. It might be less well known that alien civilizations of a level only slightly more advanced than ours routinely use the enormous power made available by tapping into the gravity fluxes of quantum black holes. It's also possible to use the time potentials of the mutron to our own great advantage. The mutron is not subject to the same methods of coercion that we use to bend normal subatomic particles to our will. They're oblivious to matter and energy alike. The power of pure thought, because of its intimate relationship with time, does have some small effect. Mutrons are attracted to areas of concentrated slackful enlightenment. A mutron container accelerator could be charged with a mutron if enough slackful minds concentrated their energies around a scoop entrance to the mutron accelerator. Once contained therein, it would take relatively little effort on the part of these minds to maintain it in a circular path. One purely technical problem facing this proposal is the size of the accelerator needed. It is a property of the mutron that it will only travel in the most gentle of curves. The minimum diameter of a circle to be traveled by a mutron is approximately 1,000 miles. Fortunately, we have easy access to an extraterrestrial body more than three times that size, Earth's moon. The accelerator could be built in a ring completely circumnavigating the lunar sphere about 100 feet below its surface. Because of the mental effort that would run it, it would be known as the psychotron. The psychotron would be a valuable tool in the use of practical time control. By accelerating the mutron in one direction or another, the entire moon could be induced to follow it in whatever temporal direction it might be directed, forward, backward, sidewise, or up down. Having this ability opens amazing possibilities. It is my proposal that this device be constructed for use in a major project to concentrate high slack wisdom in this universe. The single most radiant personality among modern man is J.R. Bob Dobbs. There are other alternate Bobs existing in other alternate time tracks. Not all of them are as prominent as our Bob, but still are privy to the same great gnosis. Others are already the rulers of their respective Earths. All, though, are truly Bob. Imagine if we could travel to those alternative time streams and convince all of those Bobs to return to our world. This is exactly what I am suggesting, the formation of the Congress of Bobs. Yes, my friends, this is our mission. Those who wish to donate to the Psychotron Project will be given a free ride to the alternate world of their choice once the project is complete. Thank you.
The Mr. Science Lecture Series from Dr. Ahmed Fishmonger. And you know, every Subgenius show is literally continuous with every other. It eventually goes in one gigantic Mobius strip. Not a loop, but actually a Mobius strip, crisscrossing with itself at the center point, but looping back again at Post Office Box
181417, Cleveland Heights, Ohio 44118.
I'll give that number again, Post Office Box
181417, Cleveland Heights, Ohio 44118.